Good morning. It's 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 9th, 2011. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting in the Public Service Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for the purpose of conducting two public hearings on proposed changes to the Commission's administrative rules. The rules being heard today are case numbers GS-1179 and RC-11236. GS-1179 is concerning gas pipeline safety rules, and RC-11236 is concerning reclamation rules. I'm Tony Clark, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, and with me today are Commissioners Brian Kalk and Kevin Kramer. Are there any opening comments from either of my fellow commissioners?
Good morning, and I'm hopeful that it can be, the testimony can probably be presented in written form. Is that's acceptable? Just a thought.
Also, good morning. I think, as Kevin said, thank you for all your work. The testimony that we read through is very thorough.
Very good. My own introductory comments, which have been thoroughly scripted by our legal division to ensure that I don't screw this up, will apply to both hearings. The Commission has scheduled these public hearings to allow everyone the opportunity to submit information or comments concerning the adoption of proposed changes to the North Dakota Administrative Code. All comments received at these public hearings will be considered by the Commission together with other written comments received. Interested persons have until August 19, 2011 to submit written comments. The Public Service Commission will consider all of the comments received and address the comments in its written decision. Anyone may request a copy of the decision, and one will be provided via email or regular mail. The decision and all other filings in each case will also be available on the Commission's website. This hearing and the website is www.psc.nd.gov. This hearing is being broadcast over the Internet and is also being electronically recorded. We ask that anyone who would like to comment take the witness chair and to speak into the microphone so the broadcast and the recording will be of good quality. And you'll notice the red light is over here, which means the broadcast is live and we are recording. Everyone will be given the opportunity to speak. If you have a prepared statement, we would appreciate it if you'd provide a written copy of it for the file, although that is not necessary. There is also a sheet on the table that you saw as you entered the room. For each of the cases, please, we'd ask those who are in attendance to sign the sheet in case for each case in which you are interested. I will now open the first hearing for comments on the gas pipeline safety proposed rules, case number GS-11-79. Does anyone wish to testify on case number GS-11-79 concerning gas pipeline safety rules? Pat, why don't we've got written comments, but I think it would make sense to take the stand. The written comments of staff are very short, just a page and a half, which will provide a brief overview.
My name is Patrick Fahn. I'm the director of the Compliance and Competitive Markets Division with the Public Service Commission. The proposed change to North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-09-03-02 adopts, by reference, changes made to the Federal Pipeline Safety Regulations and in effect as of June 22, 2011. The Commission acts as an agent for the U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Administration by entering into a federal-state agreement and receives federal funding for the enforcement of minimum gas pipeline safety standards on all gas distribution and intrastate transmission facilities within North Dakota. While all gas distribution and intrastate transmission facilities within North Dakota are required to comply with the federal minimum pipeline safety standards regardless of the state adoption of those standards, as a PHMSA agent, the state must be able to enforce the standards. The federal state agreement requires that North Dakota adopt the federal gas safety standards along with any future amendments to those standards. The initial adoption took place on June 1st of 1984 with additional rulemaking proceedings such as this one held annually if necessary to continue to adopt federal amendments to the standards. A summary of the federal standards amended and effective from August 1, 2009 through June 22, 2011 is attached to this testimony. All gas distribution and intrastate transmission facilities within North Dakota are required to comply with the federal minimum pipeline safety standards regardless of the state adoption of the federal standards. Therefore, there is no additional impact on the regulated community as a result of state adoption of the standards.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions for Pat? Anything specifically you wanted to highlight? We do have a summary of the rules provided to us. Right. Correct. I didn't know if you had any additional comments.
No. Okay. That concludes my testimony.
Okay. Very good. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on GS 11-79? Anyone else wishing to testify? Very good. All of the comments made today and those provided in writing through August 19, 2011 will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rule due to the Commission's review of comments received or the Commission discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open until Friday, August 19, 2011. I will now close the hearing on case number GS-11-79. I will now open the public hearing for comments on the reclamation proposed rules, case number RC-11-236. Does anyone wish to testify in case number RC-11-236 relating to reclamation rules? Please proceed.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
My name is Mike Berg. I'm an environmental engineer with the Reclamation Division of the Public Service Commission. The Commission is proposing to amend the collateral bond provisions for surface coal mining and reclamation operations under North Dakota Administration Code 69-05.2-12-04. The proposed changes relate to the letters of credit that are pledged as the collateral for a collateral bond and involve financial information and notices that banks issuing the letter of credit must provide to the Commission. An option will be added to allow the bank to provide a certified copy of financial reports that are already required by federal agencies instead of a balance sheet that is certified by a certified public accountant, CPA. Staff has been informed that some of the banks find it difficult to provide the CPA-certified balance sheet, but they can more easily provide the same information by submitting copies of the reports that are already required by federal banking regulators. In addition, a change is being proposed to the provision that requires the banks to give the Commission notice of actions allegedly involving insolvency or bankruptcy. This is being revised to require this notice only to the extent allowed by state or federal banking regulations. State and federal banking regulators have informed the Reclamation Division that the existing rule is in conflict with certain regulations that restrict banks from giving this information to others. These letters of credit rule changes are proposed at the request of BNI Coal Limited based on their experience in trying to obtain letters of credit from banks as the collateral for a collateral bond. The mining and reclamation rule changes adopted by the Commission must be as effective as the counterpart federal rules that have been issued by the Federal Office of Surface Mining, OSM, within the Department of Interior. Reclamation staff does not believe OSM will have any concerns with these rule changes since the current PSC rules are more specific than their counterpart federal rules. The Commission received written comments on behalf of BNI Coal Limited in support of the proposed rule changes. However, these comments also suggest a couple of modifications to the rule changes as they were proposed. No other comments in this rulemaking case have been received. This concludes my testimony.
Are there any questions for Mike?
I have just one quick one.
Okay, go ahead.
Mike, you had a comment here about these comments also suggest a couple modifications. Could you just expound on that briefly?
I would like
let them do it.
D and I explain.
I figured as much.
Modifications to it.
Okay. Thank you.
That would be okay.
Yep. No problem.
Thank you. From a commission staff standpoint, is there any concern that there'll be information loss that you gather on the current procedures that you won't be able to gather through the new avenue?
I don't believe so. We're receiving the same information. It's just in a different manner. We're getting the same information.
So okay. Very good.
I don't see that this weakens our rules. It just gives us an option to provide in a different manner.
Okay. Thanks. Any further questions for Mike?
No.
Very good.
Thanks.
Hearing none. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? I suspect there might be.
Marilyn Foss.
Marilyn, if we could have you take a microphone, that would be great.
Yeah, just use that one. No.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. I'm Marilyn Foss, appearing here this morning on behalf of BNI. With me is Pat Clement, also appearing on behalf of BNI. I will explain the proposed additional revisions that we have suggested, and then either Pat or I are happy to answer any questions that you might have. At the outset, I want to know that since we began working with commission staff on this problem, they have extended to us both the utmost courtesy and also an attitude of trying to fix things, and this is not an attitude which people experience from all government agencies, so I want to specifically point that out and note how appreciative we have been of that. The problem with the current rule is that it is essentially become out of date with respect to the documentation that is requested when a regulated mining entity wants to post a letter of credit as collateral. The legislature added a letter of credit as potential collateral for a reclamation obligation. The PSC, doing its duty in the 1990s, adopted rules for that. But now when BNI found that that would be an economic way to meet its collateral bond obligations, found that the rule had simply not kept up with changes in the banking industry. When the rule was adopted, getting a certified balance sheet was no doubt probably a completely reasonable recommendation, but as changes in banking structure and regulation progressed in the 1990s, it comes to happen that no longer do the agencies require every bank, whether it's a national bank or state-chartered bank, to get a CPA audit or a certified audit or a CPA-certified balance sheet. This is partly because of the expense issue that attends that, partly because of the change in banking structure where now most banks are affiliated with holding companies and file consolidated financial statements, so they don't have bank-only financial statements, and also because the information you can get on a report of condition and income, which all banks file with their primary federal regulator on a bank-only basis, provides the same information and is submitted under penalties of perjury and other potential enforcement actions for inaccurate call report statements. So it just seemed to us that because particularly banks of the size that might be appropriate to issue these letters of credit to support the reclamation obligation are of a size that they probably are getting consolidated financial statements, so they could not meet the bank-only requirement. And because there was an additional document of certainly equal credibility on file with the bank regulators, and if you don't file them, correctly can cause you to have significant enforcement action taken by your federal and state regulators. It seemed to us that this report of condition and information balance sheet is an appropriate additional document that could be filed to meet the Commission's need for accurate information and also accommodate bank structure and regulation as it exists today and likely will exist well into the future. The proposed draft did accommodate that by adding the report of condition and information as filed by FFIEC and required by FFIEC. FFIEC is the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council. It develops call reports which every state and national bank in North Dakota and national banks throughout the country and probably every state bank files. If you have a federal regulator, which if you're a national bank is the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, if you are a national thrift is also the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency as of July 21st, and if you are a state chartered bank in any state is the FDIC, you will file the FFIEC mandated form of the call report. That form, which can be a fairly extensive document, includes two pages that are critical to the Commission's need for information. One is the Schedule RC balance sheet, which is the same balance sheet. A balance sheet is a balance sheet. It is a detailed balance sheet. And the second, from our perspective anyway, was the attestation page, which is the submission of the document signed by institution officers and directors under penalties of perjury saying this accurately set forth the information stated on the schedule. We suggested a revision to allow simply the submission of the RC balance sheet schedule, since that is the information you have indicated you want so you can assess capital, basically. It will list capital surplus. It lists all of the reserves and other asset and debt and equity positions that are found on any balance sheet. Then we thought that just for clarity that the rule should specify that we submit that, the attestation page, and then a statement, an attestation or certification, as it were, from the bank that this is a true and accurate copy of the document that is filed with the federal regulator. That, I think, especially given the fact that the balance of the public portion of the report of condition and income is now available online from FFIEC. We went to that page with Mr. Deutsch. If the Commission wants more detailed public information, it can get it just as any other member of the committee or of the public can get. It's simply that if you get the RC balance sheet and the attestation, you've gotten the information you'd get from a certified balance sheet and also now can get more detail behind it. That was the first suggested slight revision. The other revision that we made was to the section in the rule that talked about what the letter of credit is supposed to include in terms of the institution notifying the commission. Essentially, if there's trouble coming or if somebody has said there's trouble coming. In the banking industry, the first possible, or typically the first possible allegation of trouble will come after and in the context of a bank examination. Bank examination information is by both law and regulation, and in under North Dakota, it's really more by statute than regulation, is just confidential. That is to encourage the bank examiners and the bank to have an open and free flow and uninhibited discussion of the condition of the bank. And as we noted in our comment letters, occasionally examiners will say, I'll just give an example, that we believe this particular practice violates, we'll say, Reg B, that you are not, Reg B is equal opportunity and credit, that you are not giving the correct notices for a denial under the under Reg B. That would be something that the bank will typically defend itself and have an open conversation, and there'll be follow-up and whatever. There was concern when we had this rule looked at by a bank that using the word alleging in the rule was still too broad, and that it should be tweaked a bit to say citing, because in the examination process we go from the discussion to a written exam, which actually then cites what are called apparent violations. Even that is not a determination of a violation. What we're trying to get through, and we discussed get to, and what we discussed with staff also about the enforcement process, is that well, the bank examination report itself and work papers in connection with that are confidential. Secrecy surrounding the enforcement process has changed over the last 10 years quite dramatically. And now, actually, when there is an enforcement proceeding brought, which is the kind of thing that would be of much more interest to, I would think, the commission than a mere sort of allegation or disagreement about what is could be a potential problem, ranging from a potential problem that is virtually of no concern to a potential problem that threatens the existence of the financial institution. After the report of examination, there will either be an informal process whereby the examining agencies talk to the bank, negotiate, suggest enforcement in the form of either a memorandum of understanding, or typically an order of some kind, a consent order. Those used to be completely out of the public eye. That is no longer correct. Now when an enforcement agency brings a proceeding or enters a consent order, those are public and are published. And the institutions will disclose them if they're SEC regulated, will disclose them in filings with the SEC. They are actually the federal agencies send out bulletins that list either consent orders or proceedings that are being initiated. So those are public. Our concern was simply that the PSC's rule and obligations that the bank undertakes under the letter of credit conform to its obligations under state and federal laws relating to what's public information and what's not public information. So that's why we have suggested the changes, the slight changes we have suggested there. With that, I guess I would conclude by saying these changes still leave the PSC with the full discretion whether or not to accept a letter of credit, gives it the full ability to evaluate the financial condition of the issuing financial institution, which is your concern. You want the institution to be able to back up the letter of credit if there is a draw, and leaves you with complete discretion to make those determinations. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have copies of the proposed? Are there actually? Do you have proposed modifications that
Mr. Clark? Yes, we did include specific language, proposed language changes, and I don't see them as causing. I don't see them as causing any difficulty for the commission or the financial institutions. I think they are further clarifying things. As I said to Ms. Jeffico-Sacco when our comments came in, When we saw the proposed rule, then we read it to try to figure out what possible problems could still arise and came up with these really discrete changes to resolve that, and I don't think they change either the substantive obligation of the bank or under the rules or the PSC's authority with respect to that obligation.
Okay. Any questions for Marilyn? Any other questions?
No.
No, I don't think so. I mean, a lot of you would concur with her.
The question would be to staff.
Recent statements.
I think that the staff will need a little bit of time because Jim and I, you know, noted to each other that these revisions came in but did not have time to go over them. And I think Mike confirmed staff needs a little bit of time to go over them, and they don't seem totally unreasonable at first glance. I did want to point out one thing, though. If the commission decides that it does want that that information of insolvency or bankruptcy at an earlier stage, the commission can hold that confidential under the federal or the state confidentiality statute. You don't need your own statute to hold it confidential. You just need some other one. So that part can be worked out depending where the commission wants to draw the line to require that. Otherwise, I think Jim and I and Mike need a little bit of time. That's all.
Okay. And in any event, those comments can be provided until August 19th.
Right.
Okay. And we'll certainly talk with BNI and Marilyn about our thoughts. I mean, we're not going to hide them. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments?
I'd just say any time the rigors of another agency or regulatory body can provide us the comfort we need, we don't mind one bit, generally. we rely on other people's oversight a lot to give us the comfort level we need. So anyway.
Can I just make one additional comment? The bank agencies are pretty protective of their information, but they do have processes by which they can share it with other appropriate agencies or whatever. But that process that is in place does not include the bank releasing the information, and that was sort of where the between a rock and a hard spot came with the current rule.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm Pat Clement, and I am with BNI Coal, and I would really just like to express my appreciation to Jim Deutsch and the Reclamation Division for taking the action that they have and correcting this issue with a letter of credit. We have had a couple of instances where we have been working with banks, and the current language has been a deal breaker for us. And so we know that the intent is to have this letter of credit as another opportunity to provide the coverage for this reclamation liability in addition to, you know, self-bonding and surety bonds. So it's something that we potentially will look to in the future as we go through an expansion at our mine. So I just want to express our appreciation to the commissioners and to Jim Deutsch and the Reclamation Division for taking a look and looking at this rule change to make it possible for us to avail ourselves of the letter of credit. So thank you.
Thanks, Pat. And understanding you can't speak for other coal mining companies, have you heard of this being a concern for anyone else within the industry? Is there a reason that this has been an issue with BNI that hasn't come up yet with other companies? Maybe it's just a timing issue.
Why it happened at BNI Coal is we had been employing the self-bonding with our customer, Minn Kota Power, and because of a lot of the expenses that they were employing at their young plants, their financial requirements to meet the self-bonding were no longer qualified. So we were forced to go out and look for a rather sizable amount, and you know, the only option available to us was these letter of credits. I don't know for sure, but my discussions with Jim has led me to believe that the other mining companies are using the self-bonding to cover their reclamation liability.
They are so far, but the same. There are some situations where it's getting close to what yours is, and it relates largely to some market issues, electricity issues that in the case of the customer providing the guarantees, for example. So it's not – your situation was downright scary, for a while. But there are others approaching similar situations. I'm sure this will be helpful.
The only way we were really capable of meeting our reclamation liability is that through our association with Minn Kota, who is our customer,
right,
we were allowed to do business with a cooperative bank. And, they didn't have the same kind of requirements. So, consequently, the letter of credit from them was acceptable to the PSC. But the other banks that we have dealt with, we actually, they were deal breakers, obviously.
Well, and the rating agencies are all a little owly right now, so
yeah.
Everybody's wondering.
For sure. Well, again, thank you very much. And again, thank you to Jim Deutsch and his reclamation division, and to you for looking into making this rule modification. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Any other comments? Anyone else wishing to testify? Hearing none, all of the comments provided in writing through August 19th will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rules due to the Commission's review of comments received or the Commission discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open until Friday, August 19th, 2011. I will now close the hearing on RC-11-236, and that ends this morning's hearing.
There you have it.
Everything looks exciting.
Wow.
Get all that loose.